Matt and Francesca present Seva Matrimony.
Hey, welcome to another Cine Matrimony. I am Matt Scalise, and I'm joined by my lovely wife, Francesca, who is baking cookies despite she's playing through an injury here. So I'm impressed. Much respect.
Well, they're not really good looking, and this is mostly so that I don't have to totally waste these cookies on icing.
Well,
I'm out of the game. Out of the game for a while.
Yeah, you're on the injured reserve list.
All right, stop with the sports metaphors.
So we were talking about Grand Budapest Hotel, the new Wes Anderson film. We're both sort of admittedly Wes Anderson fanboys / girls. We could just say fangirls, really. I would be fine with that. Mm. But I'm curious, because I, again, saw this one before you did. I'm curious as to your thoughts and reactions to it, because I was very certain that you would love it, but I do think this is very different for Wes Anderson. Relative to the Wes Anderson spectrum, it's sort of different. It's out there for him.
I do not think it's out there for him. I will tell you, these are the two thoughts that I had during this movie. One, I was like, thank you, Jesus, that Wes Anderson is a young man, and we're going to get years and years more movies from him, because I just love him. I don't think anybody makes movies that are such a purely cinematic experience. Like, they're just so beautiful to look at. I just so thoroughly enjoy any time I see any movie of his. It's just a completely...
I did, too.
Wonderful experience.
I kept thinking the whole way through, like, there's nothing about this. I mean, even if there's, like, a scene that you wanted to pick on something about, it's just such a pleasure to watch it, to be watching
it. Listen to it, and just something... Yeah. But, so I had that thought, and I also thought, I'm about to forgive you for killing Harry's parents. I had that thought, too. Ralph Fiennes. I was prepared. I'm at that point. He was such a delightful actor. And such a
I can't believe you tied this to Harry Potter.
Duh. Of course I'm going to. But, yeah, there's just something about, like, the pictures he makes, and he's, like, making fairy tales, and I think sort of, you know, his stuff has always got this very, like, magical and picturesque feel to it. But it's almost like he went, like, I get it this time by not just making it a story being told from one person, but that he went back two steps, well, like, three steps removed from the actual events to have one person's telling the story of somebody else telling the story.
Right. It's layer upon layer upon
which
layer.
You might think that's excessive, but frankly, the 2 minutes that Tom Wilkinson was in it was so good. And so there's just something so wonderful about him being like, stop it right now! And then his kid comes in and goes, sorry, Dad. And then he's just in the picture. Like, it's just, it's our lives. That's really how it is. It was just like such a weird little thing that he perfectly captured what it's like to have children in like 30 seconds. Is that they shoot a gun at you while you're trying to do something, and then they come in 2 minutes later, and it's still disturbing you, but it's to give you a hug and tell you sorry.
It was a weird choice to even do it that way, though. Because, like, again, that's why I say this one's really different.
Really different. All of his stuff has a very distinctive
voice. No, I think that you've just allowed yourself to be gradually getting used to this style from him. But, I mean, if you really think about it, and let's exclude Bottle Rocket.
That's what I'm saying. The only movie of his that's completely
Rushmore,
different.
Rushmore is, I think this is, if you had just seen Rushmore, and that was all you'd seen of his, and then you saw this, you would say, whoa, took a big jump.
There's like a lot of matte painting and miniatures.
Yeah, and even Royal Tenenbaums, which I think this is has a lot of similarities to, even like over the course of most of that movie, is sort of an adult relationship drama.
I'll tell you what this
and
probably
this
was
is
the
just
closest
so,
to.
This is just so utterly fantastical. You know, I mean, there are like sincere relationship moments in this movie, but for the most part, it is really, it's like a
jewel
fairy tale
box of a film. I would say that that is icing, people. That was icing sounds, not toots. Anyways. I would say this probably bears, in terms of style and panache, is probably closest to the Fantastic Mr. Fox, which maybe he was acknowledging in the fact that Edward Norton's character, the ZZ people, had fox emblems on their hat.
Oh, did
and
they?
Jacket, yeah.
I did not notice that.
But, you know, with the use of, like, I mean, again, I think it. He goes ahead and introduces you to the idea of, I am telling you a story. I am not showing you anything that is in any way based in reality. And he tells you that by twice reminding you you're hearing a story. And so I think at no point was he trying to, you know, realism did not even enter the conversation with the telling of this film.
Yeah, well, you were too far away for us to hear you just send that last part.
But
yeah, no, I mean, I think that, like, you know, part of making it, I think a big part of the acknowledgement of that is the fact that there's, you know, it's in a fake made up place, and it's vaguely resembling reality, you know, but it's never really made it clear that it's World War II and Nazis and everything. It's sort of like there's some removal from that, which I think is, again, part of the acknowledgement. Again, I don't think that's something that he's done. In some ways, Fantastic Mr. Fox is more realistically written and portrayed than this movie is.
You're an idiot, Matt. It's toy foxes.
Their dialogue, though, is what I'm saying, is like a lot more adult than what happens in this movie. This is like he's making what Quentin Tarantino uses that terminology where he talks about when he makes movies sometimes, where it's not supposed to be taking place in the real world and it's not supposed to be remotely believable. It is like you are watching a movie that would exist in the world of people that are in other movies. Like it is sort of it's so removed from reality that it's sort of like a movie about movies almost.
No, that's incorrect. It is just a movie that revels in the fact that it's a movie.
That's another way to put it. But yes, that's correct.
No, a movie about movies is Argo, Matt.
No, I'm not saying it's about making movies, but I'm saying it's clearly heavily referential to a lot of other things and to a style that...
Wait, what do you think it's referential to?
It's referential to things like the grand Illusion and like these movies about these sort of like European films about wartime, you know?
No.
I think it is. Mm. Are you a big expert on 1940s European film, Francesca?
Hey, I took a film appreciation.
Yeah. I'm telling you, I think there's definitely a lot of homage happening in this. And he based it, I mean, you saw in the credits, it's based on the writings of this European author, too. So I think, and so that's why...
I thought that was just pretend.
No, no, that's a real thing. And Ben Flanagan's actually read a book by that guy. He'd be able to speak a little bit more to it. But I think that's probably why this feels different, is because there are influences on this movie that may be different to the things that were influencing him when he made his other movies. But actually, if I had to say one thing that I think this movie is most closely related to in the Wes Anderson filmography, it's Life Aquatic, which I think is similarly sort of fantastical.
Yeah, but there was a little bit of like a, I don't know, Life Aquatic to me was a little too disjointed.
I like this a lot better than Life Aquatic.
He's like Pixar in that I'm only measuring him against himself.
Right.
So anything I say critical still means I'd always rather watch pretty much any movie he made than anything else in the world.
I agree.
They're so wonderful. But he also populates his film with people who know how to... He has a very, like, strange, almost perhaps stage aspect to his dialogue. And people... It's, like, kind of a stilted and strange way of speaking that also reminds you these aren't real people.
Right.
You're watching characters, but they're like, a little too articulate or... And, I mean, I think... I've heard interviews with him, and I think he is a little bit like this, too, that it's just... He's just writes profoundly in his own voice. But, he picks these actors, and I was very happy to see that two of the kids from, what's it called? The last one that I loved.
Wait, what about those two kids?
There were two kids that got, like, one line in it.
Who?
The new lobby boy.
It's from Moonrise Kingdom?
Yeah, he's one of the campers. And
you didn't just happen to notice this, though. You must have read this.
Excuse me. No, I did notice it. Thank you very much, you old a-hole. and also the kid who was, like, fixing the motorcycle. They were both campers from...
Who's the kid that's fixing the motorcycle?
He's just...
No, I mean, what are you talking about in the movie?
It's while...
Is it when he says, are you going hiking,
yeah,
skiing, or whatever, and it's the three things on the sign next to him?
Oh, I didn't realize it was the three. Oh,
I love that joke.
Oh, that's the kid from the movie.
I love that joke, yeah. Whatever the three things he says, it's on the sign right next to him, yeah.
That's funny. Well, and I do have to say, I mean, it was almost decadent how much talent was in there, and much of it was for, like, one line. Like, the golden keys and everything.
The golden keys, the beginning of the golden keys section is one of my favorite things in
the
entire movie.
No, the whole thing was great. Take over for me. And that it kept on being,
like,
insane. It was so good.
It's repeated takes on the same joke. And that's a thing he does throughout the movie, too. There's sort of, like, four or five versions of that joke in the movie. I mean, I guess he does it later in that same section when they get to the monastery. There's a similar joke.
Oh, yeah. That's funny.
I think it happens a few times in there. But, yeah, so let me ask you this. This movie is also notable, I think, notably different for Wes Anderson, because I think this is more R-rated. Maybe his only R-rated movie, actually. But, you know, there's jokes. It's all done as jokes. But there are jokes that involve violence and sex, and there's even some nudity in it, which is, I don't recall that ever being in a Wes Anderson movie.
No, Royal Tenenbaums has boobies in it.
Yep, you're right.
Yeah.
But I mean, so, but I still think even versus Royal Tenenbaums, this movie is a bit more adult because of those things. But I don't know. Maybe you disagree with me. I still feel like, I don't feel like any of it was like ill-intended. Like, it just felt right for the world they were in. It didn't, like, shock me, really. It was just...
Well, he is actually one of the few people who can use, like, lewdness for comedy.
There's a lot more language, too, I think.
Well, and he manages to, you know, when he uses something lewd for comedy, he doesn't, like, dwell on it in a way that feels gross, you know? Like, it's not like he lingers on it like he's a nasty old man.
It's there to make the joke.
It's there to be funny, and, you know, that's it. End of conversation.
Right.
And it's just there to be odd, too, because, you know, he loves his oddness. You know what I thought was very notable about this movie, though? It's a very lighthearted, fun movie, and even though there's, like, murders and whatnot, it's okay. But you do get a little bit, which you almost never get in a Wes Anderson movie, a little bit of a emotional punch just at the end that, you know, this guy who you've grown to love and almost forgive him for murdering the boy wizard's parents, like, gets kind of... He gets killed at the end, like, just, like, he's a man out of time. And he kind of dealt with it, again, in a not... He didn't, like, dwell on it and make a moment out of it. It's almost offhandedly spoken, but it makes you go, like, oh. I mean, it didn't anything, but...
No, but, I mean, that is actually a criticism people often have of Wes Anderson, is that his characters are all so flat that there's no way for the audience to emotionally really connect.
No, but, you know, I mean, Royal Tenenbaum, it's just his way of doing it. Again, you never feel like he's exploiting anything, but, like, Royal Tenenbaums has a very emotional ending, you know, with the dog and the dog dies, and you're like, oh.
I think it's written well. I mean, obviously, I'd like all of his movies, but, like, I would definitely say I emotionally connected with this movie more than any of his other movies. I'm trying not to, like, be too quick to make this judgment, but, like, I kind of think this might be my favorite Wes Anderson movie.
There is a lot to love. Although Moonrise Kingdom I did really quite love. I think he tapped into, you know, also, by the way, he, like, tapped into young love, and he kind of, on this one, tapped into some, you know, adult love, sort of. I mean, even though the lobby boy and his lady were young, you know, they were old souls kind of thing.
Right.
So.
Well, that's a common thing in his movies. But yeah, I mean, I think this was the most visually interesting movie that he's done. From a variety standpoint, probably my favorite part of the movie visually is the scenes from the hotel in the 60s with Jude Law. Because I love that sort of look of it being not what it used to be. And it's just this sort of tacky 60s decor everywhere. I really, really enjoy that. And I really, you know, I like F. Murray Abraham's performance too. I think that's sort of the most
touching
performance in the movie.
There was not a there was no downside. No, everybody was great. Well, like everything. I mean, even
can I give
were there
one
for a minute?
I have to make one gripe about it, just because, just so that I can be fair.
It will be on our podcast.
I kind of wish that he had found a way to avoid using CG in the downhill skiing sequence. I don't hate it or anything.
Wait, it didn't bother me at all. To me, it felt like it was models. I don't know. It didn't bother me.
Well, I just
didn't... It didn't feel like cartoonish CG to me. It was. It just felt cartoonish,
actually. It didn't. It doesn't bother me
and
to the point...
In the...
I just wish that Wes Anderson could have avoided using CG. That's it. That's all I'm saying.
I think he also used it when he would have them in profile. He did a lot of, like, high-stepping profile... You know, running away from something. I'm pretty sure that was also like...
Yeah, sure. I'm sure it was.
I don't mind it. I mean, you know, I can barely sit...
No, it was used a lot in The Prison Escape, which is a great sequence. It's so ridiculous and absurd that, like, they could have even possibly planned that. Yeah. It's so absurd.
The part, I mean, like,
they never could have known all of those things they would have to have done.
I'd say more than war movie. He was kind of... This was more like a... like Pink Panther movie. It was like a heist movie. It's sort of more...
But that's what I'm saying.
Comical, and there was like physically comical stuff. Like, you know, everybody was always high-stepping, running away, you know?
Yeah.
He was making funny silhouettes. There's like everything felt like a joke.
It just feels very, very much like a European movie to me.
I like that.
Just, yeah.
And I also forever will love Wes Anderson because I stayed for a little while into the credits. And he didn't just put, like, art department. He put, like, the person who did the fake. He, like...
He did individual effects.
Yeah, he's, like, Agatha's brooch. He gave the person who made
that.
Like, yeah, like, he went through and, like, was... Like, if you look at those credits, they were very interesting. Because he was getting, like, very specific about what somebody did. One of them was the soup maker. I mean, I don't know if these were, like... like, under the caterers, he had listed a name that was, like,
that's
soup
great.
Maker.
I don't know if that's normal or not. I really love the
very specific.
I don't know if he's worked with this guy before. I probably should know this, but Alexandre Desplat, who did the score, I thought it was a great score.
Yeah, I think he did work
score.
With him on maybe Life. No, because that was the guy who did the
that Bowie was the
covers.
Bowie. Yeah,
he has worked
French.
With him on one other one. I can't remember which one it was.
But yeah, the score is fantastic and a huge part of the movie. And I think. The other thing that is, to me, the sort of, like, standout favorite performances for me in the movie, one of them is definitely, I mentioned F. Murray Abraham. I really, really like what they did with, now I'm blanking. Oh, Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, I love Jeff Goldblum.
I thought he was really good, and I'm glad that he was included in the movie.
He is really good.
And then it's just like every little part is somebody really good. I mean, I guess it's not that hard to get good people to work with him at this point. But like, you know, I can't remember the guy's name, but the guy that plays the butler for the Duchess that's sort of like trying to help him and
Serge.
Has to run away. Serge, that guy was really great. Leah Seydoux from Midnight in Paris and other things was in, she's the maid.
No, I didn't recognize her.
Yeah. And by the way, that is also one of my favorite sets in the movie, that her house, the, you know, the heiress's house mm-hmm. or whatever she is. It's just spectacular. Like every shot in that house is just unreal. What, you know, it must be a real house, obviously, but it's like, it's
no,
just...
No, not obviously.
You think they built that set?
Probably.
It's an incredible set if they built it. But yeah, that was just such a great location. And yeah, I mean, I just like all of the little things that get snuck in there with Harvey Keitel being the ringleader of the prison escape. I don't know. I mean, it's really, like...
If I had one gripe, it was that I was there at 12 o'clock on a Thursday. There was seven other people there, and one of them was a woman who apparently has never seen a Wes Anderson movie.
Did she not like it?
Life. No, no, no. She was laughing.
This must be like, the same woman that was there when I was there.
It wasn't. It wasn't like she was laughing at jokes. There were jokes in the movie, but she was laughing at, like, when there was a name, you know, when there was, like, a chapter card, she'd be like, oh, like, she was, like, completely unaware of any of his devices and was, like, delighted by everyone. And I was oh, my gosh.
Don't be a jerk.
Like,
that's
what did I say something to her? No, I'm just like, good, all right, simmer down.
Good
okay?
for you her.
Never, I don't know if she's ever been to a motion picture.
Well, good for her. Good for her for going to her first Wes Anderson movie.
I guess so. She was delighted. I was like, calm down, lady. You've done it in like 12 movies.
No, the woman behind me, the woman behind me was absolutely loving this movie, and she was, I'm talking about screaming with laughter. It was not the kind of laughter you typically expect at a Wes Anderson movie where it's sort of like polite tittering. Like, it was, this woman was like, wah! Like, and I mean, literally she screamed a couple of times. She just couldn't believe it. It was great, though. It increased my enjoyment of the movie, for sure.
No, he does seem to be growing an audience. Like,
I know.
He keeps making more and more money every time, so good for him. I think this has done pretty well, right?
I actually haven't checked. I don't really know. I mean, this is probably the widest release it's had was this past weekend.
I think Moonrise Kingdom was his best today.
Was Moonrise Kingdom his most commercially successful movie?
I think that was a pretty successful movie.
Yeah.
But I think that I've maybe read that this one has also quite well per screen. I mean, it's, you know,
I know you don't care about Oscars, but I would like to see Wes Anderson get some Oscar attention, and I hope that this didn't come out too early in the year for that.
I think, you know what, though? I think that probably harkens to the fact that he doesn't give a rip.
I'm sure he doesn't at this point.
He never gets any attention, and, I mean, has he ever gotten love?
Yeah, oh, yeah, he's been nominated several times, yeah.
Did he get nominated for Moonrise Kingdom?
Moonrise Kingdom, I think, was nominated for Best Picture. I could be wrong.
But
I'd have to go back and look.
He seems to be, I mean, other than that he doesn't make movies very often, he seems to be headed down a, like, maybe Woody Allen track that he's...
You say that.
Whatever, I'm going to make my movie.
You say he doesn't make movies very often. I mean, he's not Woody Allen prolific, but
yeah,
he's...
Moonrise Kingdom was
He's pretty prolific. I bet he puts one out every 2 years.
Okay, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You know. It's, I like his style. I do. His slim cut cardigans, or not cardigans, slim cut corduroy jackets and, you know, vaguely bell bottoms. He's cool. He's a cool guy. And I like that he was a hipster before hipsters were hipsters. And he hasn't revolted from the fact that he became, you could misconstrue him as twee, but that's not fair to do because he's been doing this for a long time. And this is just purely how he makes movies.
No, I do think, like, you reach a certain point where it's either like, all right, well, this is either going to be your thing, or you got to get out and start, you know, proving that you want to do something different. And I mean, it seems like he is evolving within his own palette, you know? Like, it's so clearly a Wes Anderson movie, but I really feel like this movie is an evolution from what he's done before. And it shows that he's willing to take his thing, his style, and apply it in a different way than he's done before.
You know what I'm going to tell him? I'm going to say, it's your thing. Do what you want to do. Yeah. I can't tell you who to sock it to. Like that. That's what I would tell him. Yeah. It's your thing.
It's an unexpected twist in this podcast.
Listen, I'm funky. You should know that by now.
You're also heavily medicated. We should
mention. I am not heavily medicated.
Just kidding.
I have taken steroids, so if you're going to get trapped under a car, this is the time to do it, Matt. Time to do it.
All right. Well, anything else that you want to mention that we haven't touched on yet?
What is happening?
Yeah, you're just dropping cookies on each other. Don't get roid rage on me.
I won't. No. I just loved Ralph Fiennes so much. Good for him that he finally got to be, like, a real sweetheart. A real lovable guy. Like, when have you ever been this likable in a movie?
Well, I find him likable when he's a bad guy, too. I think if you'd ever watch In Bruges, like I keep telling you to, that's one of the most likable bad guys ever.
Well, okay. But I'm just saying, he actually got to be, like, a charming good guy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's also a scumbag in this movie, but...
He's not a scumbag.
Yeah, he is.
He
sleeps with old ladies to get their money.
He sleeps with all his friends. That's what he said.
Anyways.
He doesn't sleep with them to get... He genuinely likes them. Did you not get that from this movie?
Yeah.
That was the point, that he just genuinely liked them.
Well, there's... It's
and he's not
two,
doing it again. I don't think that is.
It's a two-pronged. It's a two-pronged approach, probably. He does get something else personal out of it. They're right. That is made clear. But he's also definitely going to show up when they read the will.
All right, but I don't think he was supposed to be a sleazebag. I think he Listen, I think he was meant to be, like, he genuinely loved her.
But he sleeps with all the old ladies at the hotel, though.
Because he thinks that's part of being a good concierge.
I don't think so.
I do think that's the idea.
Surely there's un-old ladies.
I know, but he likes them. It makes them feel special. I do think that's the point, Matt.
I think he's likable, I'm just saying. I think he's sort of a scoundrel. He's a scoundrel. Can we at least admit that he's a scoundrel?
No, I will not give you that. He's a pure delight.
All right, then. Noted.
Whatever. Do what you gotta do. All
right, well.
I can't tell you who decides
who can. Well, let's not do that again. All right. So, okay. Yeah, two big thumbs up for...
what did you call my thumbs? Come on.
For Grand Budapest Hotel. Go see it.
You know that I'm self-conscious about my thumbs. You know that I am, with good reason.
You've been listening to Cinematrimony. Thank you.
Okay.